Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Parimala, the moderator for this conference. Welcome to NIT Limited conference call. For the duration of the presentation, all participants' line will be in the listen-only mode. After the presentation, the Q&A session will be conducted for participants connected to Singtel. After that, the Q&A session will be conducted for participants in India. I would like to hand over to Mr. Vijay Thadani of NIT Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for making it convenient to attend our quarterly results call. I will quickly take you through a summary of quarterly results as well as an important announcement that we want to share with you, and then we'll open it up for questions and answers. So before I start on the quarterly results, I want to mention that the results have been on the website for a while, and I hope you have been able to access them on www.niit.com. If not, you can do so even now. Now, I would like to start from where we left on our strategy meeting. We were talking of three important strategies, growth strategies going forward. Our first growth strategy was to do with partnerships, and we talked about technology partnerships, channel partnerships, as well as higher education partnerships. And in that, in a part of a partnership scenario, we had also talked of reprioritization of our business lines. The second strategy was to do with new businesses, which was emerging from the fact that if we are reprioritizing our business lines, there is a strong need to get into new businesses. And the third was inorganic activity. And I'm going to touch on each one of these in this brief and what we did during the quarter so that we can then open it for questions. So let's start with the industry environment. In the industry environment that we saw, the numbers which you already have are IT and ITS industry growth, which has been at 32%, exports growing at 33%, and employee base expanding to 1.3 million people. In the training industry specifically, NIT strengthened its competitive position now that the DataQuest numbers are out in the top five. And we see new opportunities emerging in the services sector. In China, we saw Chinese universities and education system opting for IT skills and English proficiency as a combination going forward for their undergraduates, which we see as a major opportunity. In US and Europe, we saw learning BPO services gaining favor and technology companies wanting an increasing international focus or non-US focus, if I may say, and new product announcements creating large training opportunities. Just touching on NIT's market position, NIT has further consolidated its market position amongst its peers in India by being now 3.7 times its nearest competitor compared to 3.4 times this year. We grew 22% in the individual training segment, which is one of the flagships of NIT's activity, while the market degrew by 5%, which shows NIT's relative strength in the individual learning business. And overall in the domestic market, NIT grew 20%, while the market grew only 3%. In the international area, NIT showed significant growth last year, both in China as well as in the other geographies of US and Europe, where we have the corporate solutions business. The highlights of this quarter was the benefit of reprioritization of our businesses, yielding improved growth in two of the businesses, actually accelerated growth in two of the businesses, and as well as an overall improvement in operating margins. So our focus on individual and corporate business enabled us to record a 33% year-on-year growth in individual, which I must point out is ahead of the industry growth. In fact, in India, it is 55%, which is nearly 1.7 times what the industry is growing at. Corporate also grew at 17% year-on-year growth, and this is in contrast to U.S. training industry, which is growing at a single-digit percent. Corporate, where major activities in U.S. grew at 17%. We launched some new initiatives to address new opportunities, and I will talk a little bit about the progress on each one of them. We launched a project to train people for the banking industry, and it's called the Institute for Finance, Banking and Insurance. It's an independent subsidiary, and in fact ICICI Bank took a 19% stake in the subsidiary as a token of their commitment to development of banking, insurance and finance professionals. NIIT Imperia Centers for Advanced Learning was another activity in the technology-based learning field to make sure that advanced and specialized programs are made available to people in the cities in which they are through synchronous distance learning. NIIT Litmus was in the area of assessment and testing services. So we'll talk more about these as we go forward. Third strategy, part of our reprioritization strategy was to be selective in the highly capital intensive government schools business. So while we had successfully completed the Karnataka schools order this quarter, because of our being selective, we have not added any significant orders in the schools business. And to that extent, the government schools business is reprioritized. On the other hand, the private schools, which was a focus area, grew by 24% year on year. And we've added 55 new schools in to reach 783 schools. If you look at the impact of these activities on our consolidated financials, while the overall financials may show a net revenue growth of 4%, and an operating margin of 14%, I think under that layer is hidden a very strong performance by both individual and corporate business. So if you see the two of them put together, they grew 25% year on year, which is a very healthy growth. And operating profit from these two businesses grew by 72% year on year. So in line with the reprioritization strategy that we had worked out, we are very satisfied with the results that the other two businesses have shown. In terms of our overall revenue mix, now institutional business in this quarter has come down to about 10% of our overall system-wide revenues and 16% of our net revenues. Going into one level of detail in individual business financials, individual business had a stellar growth last quarter. India revenues, I mentioned 58% growth, and India contributed 58% growth in this quarter. The net revenues grew by 33%. Operating margin improved by 1,181 basis points, and it's at 15%. I think this would answer many of our friends' questions on how does the operating leverage work in this business. Because while we increase capacity by 3%, our capacity utilization was at 59%. And you can see the benefit of the increased capacity utilization directly visible in the operating margin of the business. Some other metrics from individual business. We had announced a new GNIIT and a new advanced program for engineers. Both of these did extremely well. GNIIT enrollments were up by 156%. Advanced engineering enrollments were up by 122%. Overall revenues of career business were up 62%. And overall enrollments, which include CATS, SWIFT and Futures, were up 7% year on year. In the institutional business, the reprioritization is very visible. With the non-GSA now contributing to 30% of the revenues for the quarter compared to 13%. And GSA stands for the government schools programs. The margin in the business had reduced in this quarter to 7%. Of course, the revenue has dipped by minus 46%, and that's as part of the reprioritization effort. In the corporate business, the growth was 17%, but I think more important than the growth in revenues was the increase in order intake. We had a $15 million fresh order intake which included 8 new customers, 2 new technology companies, one of which was a multi-million dollar, multi-year order in learning delivery. This is in continuation of our strong thrust in building technology partnerships. Overall, our order book for corporate business stands at $35 million with a pending order book at $35 million. And the order intake of $15 million is in excess of 150% of the quarter's revenue. And this is now the third time in succession as far as that is concerned. In the new businesses, the Institute for Finance, Banking and Insurance. Parimala, I'm getting an echo. Is that normal?
It's fine from our end, sir. I can hear a proper voice.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Sorry for the interruption. Institute for Finance, Banking and Insurance, they commenced their short-term programs for corporate, and they in fact have already trained more than 600, nearly 550 sponsored candidates by a leading bank. We are expecting a public launch of this activity through 6 centers in 6 major cities in India in the coming quarter. NIT Imperia has 2 premier tie-ups with IIM, Indian Institute of Management, Calcutta, and Indian Institute of Management, Indore. And they are also expecting to launch their services through 6 new centers in this quarter. NIT Litmus already has some prospective customers, and we expect the business again to commence in this quarter. So all the 3 new businesses that we talked about at the beginning of the quarter have made substantial progress, and we do see their revenue generation activity picking up during this quarter. Overall, in terms of headcount, we added 165 people net in this quarter. And in terms of education centers, I already talked about a 3% increase in the capacity. Now let's talk about the third strategy, which was to inorganic activity. I'm very pleased to announce that today NIIT entered into a definitive agreement to acquire Element A, a US-based leading provider of learning solutions. The transaction is expected to close very shortly in the next 1 to 2 weeks. Together, NIIT and Element A will emerge as the leading global provider of comprehensive learning solutions with more than 3,000 employees, over $250 million in revenue, and a presence in 32 countries. Element A's current run rate is $80 million. It currently leverages its renowned technology knowledge hub and an award-winning suite of more than 3,500 courses. Its learning solutions are enhanced through custom content development and strategic learning services. So in a sense, some of their custom content services would overlap with ours. But even there, based on the methodology that we use, there is a fair degree of complementarity. So as you can see, our corporate solutions and our overall learning business with their strong technology platform as well as strong content library for which they have more than 1,500 current customers gives NIIT a fair window of opportunity to position together with Element K as the first and the best choice for a learning BPO services provider. Just to explain you some other aspects of this transaction, we expect Element K to retain its brand name and to run as an independent operating entity. The current CEO, Stephen Hoffman, will continue to be the CEO of the new entity as well as a director on the board. We expect the board to be 4 people from NIIT, 1 independent director, and then Stephen Hoffman to make it totally 6 people. As we speak right now, we see an opportunity to create a very unique and strong offering set to position NIIT and Element K to emerge as the leader in the learning BPO marketplace. We believe there are some unique benefits which we offer to our customers. The first is comprehensive solutions. If you add the suite of services and products which Element K has today, which is a strength in custom publishing, a strength in custom content development, a very strong content library, and a very well-renowned and stable, robust platform on which a large number of customers have their e-learning services hosted, that gives a very strong addition to NIIT's capability, which is in building strong custom development, custom content development. The second in learning delivery through instructors as well as online, and finally through learning technology and managed services. The combination is creating a very comprehensive solution set. The second is global efficiency. With operations and development staff around the world, customers will have access to the right balance of local and remote resources based on their project requirements. So they will not only benefit from the advantages of offshore, but they would also benefit from the expertise, experience, and localization of on-site. Global reach. Through a combined presence and established reputation in 32 countries, our customers will be able to access global learning solutions with local support. In terms of our customer sets itself, in terms of reach, we have a very strong presence in technology sector with large number of technology clients and a few important Fortune 100 corporate clients. On the other hand, they have a strong presence in the corporate sector with 1,500 clients and a few important technology clients. So when we combine the two customer bases, we'll have a much deeper or much stronger offering for the technology space and a much larger base of customers which we will be able to address together in the corporate space. So that is the update on NIIT and Element K. With that, I would now like to open this for question and answers.
Thank you very much, sir. At this moment, I would like to hand over the proceedings to Lucy to conduct the Q&A for participants connected to Singtel. After this, we will have a Q&A session for participants at India Bridge. Thank you, and over to you, Lucy.
Thank you, Paribala. We will now begin the Q&A session for participants connected to the Singtel Bridge. Please press 01 to ask your question. Participants who wish to ask questions, please press 01 now. At this moment, there are no questions from participants at Singtel. I would like to hand over the proceedings back to Parimala.
Thank you, Lucy. We will now begin the Q&A interactive session for participants at India Bridge. Participants who wish to ask questions, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. On pressing star 1, participants will get a chance to present their questions on a first-in-line basis. Participants are requested to use only handsets while asking a question. To ask a question, please press star 1 now. First in line, we have Mr. Dipen Mehta from Dipen Mehta Share and Stock Brokers. Over to you, sir.
Yes, I just wanted to understand that in your reprioritization strategy, it's clear that the institutional business is being scaled down and you're being selective over there. But for the year, is it likely that it may turn out to be a drain in the sense that, you know, you could start making losses in that business, given that there will always be some want of overhead in that division?
No. Our aim would be to make sure that that business gets scaled down but not loses its profitability. It will, of course, not be at the level, it will not be at the same volume level at which it would be, but I think it can reach, it can maintain the profitability it has. So overall, if you see the NIIT impact on NIIT, we still believe that the other two businesses will more than compensate for this relaxation and selectivity which we are applying in the institutional space.
That means that you at least maintain adequate volume to make sure that two ends are met in that division.
Yes. That division, by the way, has very little SG&A. It has mostly direct and variable expenses.
Okay. So second question relates to the increase in expenses in the corporate business, because of which the operating profit margin, correct me if I'm wrong, there was a marginal decline. Any explanation for that, sir?
No, that has to do with the way the business mix is operating and the way certain projects come in. One part of their business, if you see the overall average margin during the year, we have actually an improvement in margin as we grow forward. At a quarter-to-quarter level, as you can see, that was a fairly unique situation last year when we had a 19% margin.
Okay. Third question, sir, relates to the financing of this $40 million acquisition. What are your thoughts? I know that we have taken approval for $50 million global offering. Is that the only way, or maybe internal accruals also would come to action?
Yeah. Actually, we have not yet decided to use the FCCB at all. We have already tied up using our internal accruals and a line of funding, of a line of borrowing, that we will be able to close the transaction and work with the acquisition in the next few months. FCCB will be a backup option. Well, not a backup option, but more an option which we would like to use if we think it is in the best interest of the shareholders.
Right, sir. Thank you. All the best. I'll just reserve some more questions for later.
Thank you. I must accept the fact that our results are a bit late this quarter, but next quarter onwards, even next quarter, our dates are not matching. Unfortunately, some of our directors were not available this quarter, independent directors, because of the global travels, but hopefully soon we will be able to give the results much earlier. But thank you for your feedback.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Mr. Deepan Shah from Kotak Securities. Over to you, sir.
Good evening, sir. This is Deepan here. Just had a couple of things. First of all, just wanted to know, as regards the acquisition, what is the profitability of Element K as of now? And the next part would be that in the individual business, to what extent can we take up the capacity utilization? What will be the stable state of utilization we should be looking at?
Okay, thank you. Element K in the last operating year had a small operating loss. This year they have been on a turnaround and have, in fact, in the last month made a small operating profit. They are nowhere near the margins that we have. We do believe that this year, at an operating profit level, the acquisition will be neutral to us, and next year it would be accretive because we have a strong cost saving and synergy program which we are implementing immediately from the day we start working with them.
Okay.
So that answers your first part.
And this, sorry to interrupt you, but this at the operating level would be the EBITDA levels or the PBT levels or the PAT levels?
At operating, I mean the EBITDA levels.
So on the PAT levels, where do you think the company will end in the current year?
Okay. At PAT level, there may be a marginal dilution depending on how the funding of the acquisition takes place. So right now, if we use the mix of internal accruals and debt, then to that extent, as far as this acquisition is concerned, we may be at a neutral level even on a PAT level.
Okay. In fact, I did not get it properly. I was more referring to the PAT margins of Element K, excluding whatever debt options we use.
The PAT margins, if you do PAT, I mean without the tax, without the interest implication, then we expect that in the 7 or 8 months that we would be running this company, we may have a marginally positive PAT.
Okay. And does Element T have any debt on its book, on its books?
As a part from the day we take over, it does not have any debt on its book, other than the debt that we would take to finance the acquisition.
Okay. And just one last thing, only anything, what is the net cash with the company, if at all any, and what will be the goodwill which will accrue because of this deal?
It's a private limited company. It's a privately held company. Typically, privately held companies, when they change hands, you get very little cash. We may have to we may have to include a part of working capital to support them. Right now, obviously, when we take over, there will be a goodwill in their books based on the acquisition, based on the assets and the price that we paid. But that goodwill perhaps will not, because that goodwill perhaps will not reflect in any way in our P&L accounts in the consolidation.
Okay. And the next one was, how about the capacity utilization, to which levels can you go in the individual business?
Yeah. I have maintained this before, and I will ask my colleague Raghavan to answer this question for you.
In the last quarter, we reached a capacity utilization of 59%.
Okay.
In a steady state, we think when it reaches around mid-60s, so 65 to 70%, we should be looking at opening new centers. Obviously, this is on a global gross level. It will vary from center to center and location to location.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, just a question on your China business. How has that fared over the current quarter?
It's grown 25% in the last quarter.
And in terms of profitability,
it is profitable at this point of time.
Okay. And just on the Element K again, how old is this Element K company, and what was the basis for the valuation?
Coincidentally, the company was started in 1982, about 3 or 4 months after NIT started. So it's a 24-year-old company that way, or 25-year-old company. But they have been through three avatars, if I may say. They were in the first avatar called, their name was Logical Operations. In the second, they were bought by a publisher called Ziff Davis, very famous publishing house. And in their third avatar, Ziff Davis sold it to for it to become Element K. Element K financials were examined by us. Their operations and synergies were looked at by us. And based on that, we did the standard valuation methods that are used, including DCF and obviously negotiation. It was also a competitive bidding situation, though I think we were a favored partner, because we were more strategic to them in terms of the benefit which comes to their employees and their growth.
So just to get a sense of how the Element K has grown over the last few years, has it been that from a higher base it's fallen, or how has the trend of that company been, and what's this kind of balance sheet that the company has?
Okay. We would be able to share much of these details with you perhaps next quarter, because as I said, the company went through two or three transactions in between. They also sold a part of their businesses. They added on a bit of debt. They were affected by the downturn. They recovered from that downturn and were at about a flattish revenue for the last 2 or 3 years. But we, when we inherit the company, will get a clean balance sheet with clean set of assets. And therefore, when we talk to you next quarter, post the closing, we would be able to share with you in detail how the balance sheet of that will look like.
And just one thing, Vijay, the last thing, sorry for being so much inquisitive, but if we have to talk about the business of Element K, I believe it is basically in the custom content development, as you say. So it will develop content for the customer, The second one would be, it will publish the content on their behalf, and if at all they want this e-learning, then it will host that content on its own platform, which can be accessed by the customer's employees. So would that be the business model of Element Key? Have I understood it right?
No. No, I would like to, parts of what you said are definitely correct.
Mm-hmm.
I would like my colleague Ashish Basu to explain to you how exactly Element K functions. And I would also ask him to add to that how Element K and NIIT together create a potent combination. I think you would be interested to hear that.
Yeah. Okay.
And by the way, before he answers, you don't have to be apologetic about asking questions. That's the whole purpose.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me try and explain to you the basic business models that Element K has. So the first thing is that they are primarily, or they started out being an e-learning organization, and the two parts of revenues that they have is either from e-learning or from the print fulfillment function. Now, Element K sits in the middle between a whole lot of training centers and technology providers. So here's how it works.
Okay.
If Microsoft, let me give you an example, and that might make it a lot easier.
Sure.
So let's say Microsoft has an online platform in which all Microsoft, if you want to do a Microsoft course, you have to go to this particular platform, and then you can do deliver a course, you can take a course for Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is actually running off Element K's platform, and Element K makes money each time there is somebody from who's a Microsoft customer who comes on board.
Mm-hmm.
The second is that if you use, let's say, Microsoft official curriculum and you want to kind of have access to that material was largely developed by Element K, but it is certainly distributed by them.
Okay.
So all those orders would go to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what actually this does is that Element K owns the channel.
Mm-hmm.
The training centers work for Element K more or less because they would much prefer to work with Element K than anyone else. So now Microsoft, of course, uses Element K to access the channel, but so does Cisco, so does every other major technology player who wants to access the training channel.
Mm-hmm.
So Element K is sitting in the middle between technology companies and between training providers, fully servicing the training providers, whether it is online or whether it is print.
Mm-hmm.
So which means, like, just imagine that you're a new technology company or mm-hmm. you're even a very large technology company.
Mm-hmm.
Element K does not take money from you. It generates money for you because it essentially makes sure that your material, your product, and which is both your content, your course material and everything else, reaches the channel properly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one core part of the business model. The
mm-hmm.
second part of the business model is essentially because they have their own IP, intellectual property, which is content and technology,
mm-hmm.
they have a huge sales team which is actually selling this product globally, though I must admit that most of that is in the US, and there is a revenue stream coming in from there. So these are the two basic models that they have. Now in terms of capability, so let's say for example, again, staying with Microsoft, they are making, Microsoft pays them around $2 million in a year to just maintain the platform. They
mm-hmm.
pay them another few million dollars to do custom content development.
Mm-hmm.
But then they're paying them something like about, I mean, they're generating revenues considerably above $10 million on the servicing of the channel.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a size and the approach that there is to that's important. Okay, so that's the Element K approach. Now, if I were to just stay with the technology piece, then NIIT and the Knowledge Solutions business at this point in time, we are adding technology customers at the rate of 2 to 3 a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And we've reached a base of about 35 customers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I were to add that to Element K's capability to go deep into an account and essentially become indispensable to that customer, then we have the breadth and they have the depth as far as technology is concerned.
Okay.
This reverses very nicely as far as corporate customers are concerned, because when we look at corporate customers, they have 1,600 odd corporate customers.
Mm-hmm.
Who are people who are using their content and their hosted technology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for these people, Element K providing services is relatively limited at this time because they are not a major service provider, whereas we are a big service provider.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Element K's subscription model is something which we can leverage to provide services.
Okay.
And then the extension of that, the natural extension is that if I'm a person who's taking subscription and if I have services, then I naturally move into the learning BPO direction.
Mm-hmm.
which actually is our end goal. So our objective, one of our primary charters and objectives in getting onto Element K was to essentially jointly get into the LBPO space.
Okay,
because so now if you can see what happens really is that for technology providers, we are giving them the width and we are getting the depth from them, which is an LBPO play. And in corporate customers, they have the width and we are providing the depth, which again moves us into an LBPO play. And that's the reason why we are very excited by this transaction.
Okay. Yeah, I think I get the picture. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Sonal Kohli from AIM Capital. Over to you.
Mr. Sudani, congratulations on good set of numbers.
Thank you.
Just wanted to understand, in terms of your institutional business, how much of it accrues from the order book which you would have now over the next 12 months? And what was the same over the last quarter?
Okay, about 44% of our order book will be coming from, will be accrued in the next 12 months. So we do, and I think your question is therefore how much will our government business be this year? So
right.
So last year, for example, private schools was about 13%, 17%, sorry. This quarter it has been 30%. I think over the year we will add a few government clients selectively, and to that extent, I think if we believe that our overall private business may go up to as much as 20 to 25% of the total.
Okay. And last quarter, when you had an order book of about 165 crores, what was the order executable over next 12 months at that point of time?
I'll just share that with you in a minute. It would be a similar number.
So one would say that you would still be able to manage to, achieve not more than 25% kind of degrowth based on the order book you already have.
Yeah, because those are commitments that we have and we have to honor those commitments.
Okay. So one thing.
Last year, last quarter, by the way, it was exactly 44%.
Okay. So basically 165 crores into 44% is an assured government business which I have. In
yes.
addition to that, there's a private business which is growing.
Yes.
In terms of your business in 05, 06, what portion of the revenues was from the India business in the individual business?
In out of the total, how much was India in the total?
Out of the individual business, what was the India's contribution last year?
I will just give it to you in a minute. I'll just pull it out in the last year, right?
Right.
Yeah. If you can just give me another question meanwhile, then I can meanwhile pull this data out.
Could you throw some more light on the Philips order, please?
Yeah. So let me put you back to Ashish Basu. He will explain you the Philips order as well, also the progress of that.
Okay. The way the Philips order is structured is that we are responsible to service all external programs that Philips employees undertake. Now, this is being rolled out in a gradual fashion. So we start, they have three large regions. So for example, last quarter, the EMEA region signed up. This quarter, the NAM region has signed up. And Asia Pacific is due for later part of this quarter. Now, what that implies is that, and this is it's not an immediate process, but increasingly every program that people are attending, the way they register for the program, the way they are supported, the way feedback gets done, the way the approval cycle works, and the help desk, and everything to do with actually administering the training program is something which we get paid for on a per unit basis. So for every person who takes every course, there is a certain amount of money that comes to us. And that's really how the Philips thing is. We expect the numbers to sort of, I think it was about a third last quarter. It will be three times this quarter. It will grow about double the quarter after, and it continues to increase thereafter through the next year and a half or so.
Okay. I have the answer to the first question. India revenue was 57% of total system-wide revenue. and 79% of the net revenue.
Mr. Chidani, if you look at this quarter, you have mentioned in your presentation that the India's revenue contribution was, I think, somewhere in the 60s.
68%.
So going forward for the year, and India revenue is, I guess, growing at 58% and China 25%. So the other, as far as countries are concerned, they would be degrowing in terms of revenue.
And we talked to you in the investor conference on focusing on six key geographies and reducing our GNA, because we had a large exposure to a large number of geographies, and we are now trying to make sure that there is a minimum size in each geography. So that's the approach which we are using in the other international partners, the rest of the international business.
Just wanted to understand, because you this business contributed 68%, the India business contributed 68% of the total individual revenues, and 70% last year, and this business is growing at more than 50%. So would it be fair to say that at the end of the year, the contribution of India business would be more than 75-80% line?
I tend to feel that the growth that you saw this quarter, you perhaps may not see the similar growth right through the year. Remember, the denominator will keep increasing as we go in the next quarters. So to that, because last year also was a heavy growth period for us. So I think overall growth that we have projected for individual business to be in the range of 25 to 28% is what we would still bank on. I tend to feel China will be consistent and will grow 25% consistently and maybe a little more, because China in two quarters does little better than two other quarters. The next quarter, July, August, September, they do a little better, and Jan, Feb, March, they do a little better, because those are the times when NIT inside enrollments peak up. So overall, I think if I was to do at an annual basis, I would say China will grow between 25 to 30%, and overall the rest of the world will perhaps degrow a little because of the focus, and India will grow a little better than 30%, so that the overall is between 25 and 30.
Okay. In terms of Element K, what is the debt which they have on books as of now? I understand that you won't be taking over the debt, but what would be the debt currently on the books?
Well, they had a very complex structure, and because they were owned by financial investors, and I think they had had two or three rounds of funding. And some of them were, so there was Crescent Capital, there was Equity Capital, and then they had a line of credit from their banks. But I think all that will be history as far as we are concerned, because we will inherit a clean balance sheet with zero debt.
What kind of receivables? And if I'm right, the company's top line is $80 million.
Yes, it was about $80 million in the last 12 months.
Would you be taking over the receivables also, Sunny?
Yes, we are taking over all the good receivables.
Also wanted to understand from you that the GNIT enrollments are up 156% year on year.
Yes.
And typically your GNIT program varies from 1 year to 4 years, depending upon the length for which a student stays in the program.
3 years, yes.
So going forward, in the previous years also your GNIT growth was significantly higher than the overall India's growth in terms of the enrollments.
Very good.
So with a lag of, let's say, a year or two, as the students in the initial year, the growth is not much higher, because there would be certain students who are already there in the course for last 3-4 years. But as one should go forward, shouldn't the growth actually accelerate rather than deaccelerate?
No, but I don't think I said, or we didn't allude to the fact that it didn't decelerate.
No, what I meant was that...
Are you referring to this quarter versus last quarter?
No, I mean in terms of over the next few years, as the base impact gets changed, because in the last 2 years, there would be certain GNIT students which have been there for last 2-3 years.
Yes.
And as the enrollment would be increasing,
yes,
the actual impact and your average, your number of students on a weighted average basis would increase.
Correct.
in the next 1 or 2 years.
Correct.
So shouldn't the growth actually accelerate rather than decelerate going forward?
I think it will be more mathematical because we have to see the denominator at the size, because whenever you are looking at growth, you are looking at percentage growth, you have to look at the denominator. So okay. For all you know, what you are saying may as well be true. But I think this quarter, the growth which we expected also came out of the fact that if you saw our whole advertising pattern, and maybe Raghu can talk a little bit about that, we announced our program a little earlier than what we normally do. So to that extent, there is a balancing factor which you will see happening, because finally the total universe that we address is the same. But Raghu, may you talk about that?
I think that is true. Basically, the JNIT, new JNIT that we rolled out has been accepted very well. We started the campaign much earlier. In terms of the higher composition of the JNIT students in the total enrollment, the way it will actually reflect is in our capacity utilization, which is something I talked about earlier. So at the end of the day, from a JNIT student, you can only recover a revenue for 1 year during a year. So that will continue to be the case. And as I mentioned earlier in the investors conference, the new JNIT, the fee structure happens to be a little different than the traditional JNIT fee structure. And although the products are not comparable, this is about 25% higher than the fee structure of the earlier version of the JNIT. So all these things will contribute to acceleration that we are seeing. And earlier, Vijay's point about was between quarter-to-quarter comparisons and not on an annualized basis.
Okay, and what would be the cash and debt on the books and the data days?
For NIT total?
Yeah.
Okay. Our cash balance at the end of the quarter was 557 million. At 557 million, debt has reduced to 606 million.
This is including the SCCB?
Excluding.
This is excluding the SCCB?
Yeah. Debtor days have improved.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Thadani.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Participants who wish to ask questions, may please press star 1 now. Next, we have Ms. Priya Rohira from Enam Securities. Over to you, ma'am.
Hi. Good evening to all of you all. Just wanted to assess, with the merger of Element K with NIT Limited, how would the composition of your technology-based clients change in terms of revenue terms?
Okay. I'll answer one part of the question. While what you mentioned perhaps was not technically what we are trying to do, Element K is acquired by us, so it will be yet another independent operating entity within an NIT system.
Okay.
But how the technology clients and the percentage of revenue coming from technology clients change, is that what your question?
Okay, so if I were to just look at the percentage within the corporate segment now, we would be looking at NIT's current percentage in corporate from technology customers is typically around a third, and for Element K it's about half, maybe to about 60%. So the overall, if I combine the whole thing, it would probably now be about 60% technology and 40% others.
Okay. The other thing which I wanted to check out, given the space in which they're operating, what would be the competitive scenario over there?
In the space that they are operating, really the major competition is if the customer takes that whole proposition back inside.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of their unique positioning elements, because it's hard for a technology company to access that entire channel without Element K.
Sure.
But there are organizations which just say, look, we'll do it ourselves, and then the technology customer has no other option but to go to the organization itself. So there is no direct competition per se. On the corporate side, when we look at catalog, there are certainly many other competitors, both bigger and smaller, with a bigger range of products and smaller. That whole part of it has is a very competitive landscape.
Also, in terms of the concentration, given that you gave an example of Microsoft, whereby they get around $10 million greater than on an annuity base in terms of servicing to channels and other licensing sort of revenues. So if on a $80 million, how would the top say 8 to 10 technology clients for whom they service would actually contribute?
Yeah, so first is this was, I took Microsoft more as an example, but I mean, if you want to know how much to the major technology companies contribute, it will be more than half their revenues.
Okay, that really helps. Thank you very much and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Next we have Mr. Michael from Bridger. Over to you, sir.
Yes, hello, good evening.
Hi, good evening.
I was wondering, on the Element K acquisition, could you walk through some of your plans to take this business from operating break-even to operating profitability? Is it cost savings? Is it revenue growth? Can you kind of outline that strategy?
Yeah. It is obviously a combination of cost savings and revenue growth coming out of organic as well as synergistic revenues. And I will ask Ashish to give you a picture, but I think it's very simply understood, they have a very large on-site base, and if an overall revenue grows between Element K and NIIT, and most of the growth in resources happens offshore, that itself will create a larger operating profit as we go forward. But in more specific terms, I'll ask Ashish to talk to you about.
Thank you.
Okay, so just to try and answer that question at the at the outset, there are some costs which very simply come out of the system, which is primarily on G&A and on some R&D, because we both have a similar platform and we both have the same technology base which we use to maintain the platform, so we don't need to maintain two sets of people and so on. And obviously ours being offshore and a lot less expensive is something which we will naturally do. So practically from the get-go, the independent operation of Element K is profitable to start with. Not all of this will kick in right in the first couple of quarters, because obviously there are expenses in making all this happen. But we are certainly expecting that the next complete year, it will be a profitable situation. On the synergy aspects, we are looking at primarily two or three areas. The first is, as I explained before, we have access to many technology customers. Element K tends to have much deeper relationships but has access to fewer technology customers. We plan to take that offering into the technology companies that we have, and each one of those orders is normally reasonably substantial, so that's certainly one thing where we expect significant synergies and growth. The second is that there is, is revenues because of the fact that we can take services which are somewhat more economical and which can be supported from offshore to their 1,500 customers who presently are just catalog customers. So that's the second part of synergy revenue growth. And the third area would be around, looking at the global approach of packaging the products that they have, but being able to market it into an international arena. So those would be the three big synergies areas which would generate additional revenues as per the plan. And we are very confident actually on the first one, which is the biggest contributor at this point in time. It also allows us to have a reasonably substantial play in the technology area, which is something which is much to be desired.
And if you think about just the cost part of the synergies, And once that is in effect in 2007, what should be a reasonable EBITDA margin for this business just with the cost saving?
I think we would come back to these numbers much more in detail next quarter, because I think at this point of time, whichever way we have looked at it, we are still from outside the doors. We are not inside the doors. But during this quarter, after closing, when we go through the full phases of integration, I think we would be able to come up with more exact stuff. So I think I would like to answer this question after a couple of months.
Great. And a few other questions. On the institutional business, is the result that we see in this quarter, is that roughly a fair run rate, or does the business still need to degrow during the transition?
I think that's a fair run rate. In fact, you would see a little increase in it because there are some select government orders which we want to add, given the set of relationships which we have. But this is certainly what you can see. Second, I think the private schools business is growing and is growing pretty well. So that will also cause a little bit of growth as far as that is concerned. Overall, we look at the institutional business as becoming more private schools oriented, nearly 25% or so, in fact, a little more if possible by the end of the year.
Understood. And in terms of the overall business, excluding Element K, the outlook for this year for revenue growth and for margins?
As you can see, both corporate and individual businesses have done extremely well. In fact, their growth is enabling us to reprioritize ourselves faster than we would have otherwise done. And therefore, what we would like to do is to maintain this balance, and we would like to hold on to the or maintain the outlook that we had talked about, which is to say that we would like to grow by a faster rate than we grew last year, maybe 100 or 200 basis points more. And we would like to have a higher operating margin, maybe 100 or 200 basis points overall for NIIT business without Element K. And going forward, we would be reporting separately for Element K till it's fully integrated, but till then we would like to make sure that till it is an independent operating entity, which it is for a while, we will report their results separately along with, of course, our results. And therefore, you'll be able to see the individual progress as we go through the year.
Great. And then just two final questions. One on Element K, the funding from, you said, internal funding. How would that $40 million come internally?
No, I mentioned that we have internal funding. As you know, we had raised an FCCB last year of $10 million. So we have part of those proceeds still left with us. We have some internal accruals, so that's the internal part of the funding. We are taking a line of credit. We are adding some debt into our balance sheet. And we are taking some debt to finance this transaction. And that debt would be supplementing that.
Great. And then just last question, accounts receivable at the end of June?
Okay. Accounts receivable at the end of the June were $1,786 million, representing 143 days. A large part of these receivables, as I've been mentioning before, are in the institutional business, government institutional business. We did have some very good collections. So I was actually joking to somebody a few minutes ago, saying in previous quarters, we used to feel very thrilled and used to celebrate when we got a new order from a state government. Of late, we feel very thrilled when we get a payment for an existing contract from a state government. And this quarter was one of those.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call, and best luck with Element K.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Next, we have Mr. Girish Pai from East India Securities. Over to you, sir.
I just want to understand the size of the learning BPO market. Could you throw some light on that?
Yeah, I think we have some numbers, though it's not a very well-developed number, but Ashish has done some work. Ashish, would you like to share?
Okay, so this is a slightly tricky one, and I'll tell you why. A training outsourcing market is seen from two glasses. One glass says that any work that you give outside at all is training outsourcing. The second one talks about transferring some level of responsibility for delivering on an entire process. So if you look at the first criteria, the number for the size of the market for learning BPO seems to be somewhere in the vicinity of $3 to $4 billion. In the first one, it seems to be closer to about half to one, which is what we would term as learning BPO today seems to be in the vicinity of half to $1 billion. It's not a very big market at this time, but it is growing very rapidly. And that's really the place where we believe that there is going to be extensive growth and play.
Just to support what he said, I must tell you these are not very developed numbers because there are a number of research firms, but I just want to share with you the report of a company called the Acceleration Group. They said that the corporate spending on employee training in US is expected to be $53.1 billion, and it is supposed to grow at 8% in the next 2 years. The second, 38% of this corporate spend will go out to out-tasking suppliers, which is the vendor target base that we would like to be in. Third, the growth market will be customer stroke product training, and the largest opportunity will be in product training with respect to technology orientation. So this, by the way, was a complete universe of training. From there has to be derived the universe for the universe that we operate in. And the last is 15 to 20% market penetration in the next 5 years for outsourcing services. I must admit, these are four disparate pieces of data, but they are talking about the following trends. Number one, corporate training spends are increasing. Number two, outsourcing of corporate training or out-tasking is increasing. And number three, it is the highest expected in technology-related areas. So that's why we believe that the combination that we are talking about is a very potent combination. We have to pull this out for the area which we service.
Okay. This learning BPO business, what kind of stable state margins would you be seeing, say, a couple of years down the road?
I would at this point of time hazard a guess only because I don't think it is a mature segment of the industry, but my gut tells me, or our guts put together tell us, that it should be in the range of any other outsourcing services that you have, typically 20 to 25%.
This is a level of that level.
It would be, I don't think the difference will be very dramatic between EBITDA and PAT.
Okay. The second thing I wanted to understand was regarding your private school initiative. What exactly is the business model you follow vis-a-vis the other leading player in the market, UCOMP? How is your effort different from theirs, and what do you see as market potential in that area?
Okay, there are two business models that are prevalent. One is you sell the present, and second, you sell the present in present, which means you sell it on a subscription basis as the school runs, and the second is you sell your future in the present, which is what is you take the whole IPR and you sell it one shot to the school. We have so far followed a very strong subscription model, and we believe that the subscription model is a way of getting you higher profitability, but yes, a more sustainable growth is possible if we use a mix of a bit of licensing of certain IPR which the school will use on a permanent basis. So we have a mix of license and subscription model. We believe that some of the other players in this market do use a licensing model.
Okay. Is there any seasonality in the private school business in terms of addition of schools to your base?
Yes. Yes. First half of the year is normally better than second half of the year.
Okay. And the numbers that you show added, does it mean that these schools are signed up or they started giving you revenues?
I'm sorry?
The number of schools you said you added up, some 55 odd schools.
Yes.
Is this a sign-up number or is it the schools who started giving you revenues?
No, I mean, normally when you sign up, the sign up is only valid if the school starts giving revenue. Otherwise, a piece of paper signed up doesn't mean anything. So it is schools which have started giving revenues. That's first. Second, in answer to the first question you mentioned, I was referring to the first 6 months of the calendar year. Because in the first 6 months, January, February, March, schools are preparing for the next session. And the laggards are in April, May, June, catching up with that, and which is where most of the activity happens. And then in July, August, September, it kind of reduces a little.
Okay. And in terms of market potential in India, what kind of market potential do you see here?
Rajendran, can you talk about the number of private schools?
So in terms of market potential, there are two kinds in private schools. There are the one-off schools and there are what we call as the chain schools. So you may have a Saint Xavier school chain, which will be about, let's say, 20, 30, 40, 100 schools. Now, like Vijay said, there are schools where we sell licenses, there are schools where we sell subscription models. Why we need the license approach for which we have created a lot of products is number one, because there are many schools now who have their computers already in place. And what they are seeking is, and some of the teachers are already trained, what they are seeking is not only IT training, but to use their existing hardware, software, infrastructure to start improving the education in other subjects. So we have now, as part of the licensed products for teaching IT, English, social sciences, maths and science. So a combination of this has got a lot of potential. In addition to this, what we did last year, and we are seeing the effect of that now also, is to work along with Intel, Microsoft and the State Bank of India to create a loan system so that there is a package which the schools sign up with the SBI and they get the loan from SBI. They go and buy the hardware and they pay up, the bank pays up directly for us the license and the schools pay back over a period of time. We believe that the work which we did about 10 months back in starting this, putting it together, announcing, launching, is now paying off because there are more schools signing up for this loan system.
Okay, and in terms of capex for the subscription model, how much would that be?
For the subscription model, we don't have any. For the private schools, there is no capex.
Okay.
Because we do not supply hardware at all. The schools buy directly, or there may be a few cases where our school service providers may take on themselves to provide for the schools. But NIIT does not put capex.
Okay, just one last question on private schools. What is the revenue per student earned you would be getting in the subscription model?
It can vary. It's a volume game. So if a school promises that in that school they are going to give us, let's say, 600 students, another school promises 400 students, another school promises 250 students, based on that there will be some tuning of the revenue also. It also depends on are we also supplying some licensed product upfront. So it can vary depending on which model we are using, right from 30 rupees to almost 60 rupees.
Okay, this is net coming to you or will it also go to the service provider?
Let's take it right now as net coming to us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pai. Next is a follow-up question from Mr. Kohli of AIM Capital. Over to you, sir.
Mr. Charani, two questions on your institutional business.
Yes.
Firstly, in the private business, are the margins typically higher than the government business? And secondly, in the government business, over last 1.5 years, in terms of the contracts, has the market moved towards content-based contracts rather than providing purely the equipment and the IT training part? And to that extent, one could only bid for the contract if one has content in the regional languages?
No, I just answering your second question first, and I'll ask Rajendran. He is actually in touch with most of the state government. there are there is no established pattern. If there was an established pattern, that was of the BOOT model, the build, own, operate, transfer model. Unfortunately, government is such a buyer that even one unique case can create or look like a market trend. So I don't think one would anticipate that, because, for example, we have localized content in nearly 7 or 8 languages, but we keep that more as a facilitator rather than as a qualifier. First part of your question.
Yeah, just to add on to that, in all our BOOT projects, which were, for example, Karnataka or Andhra, we are providing the content in the local language. Some places we provide in English and local language, or only English, or the local language alone. But I think you're coming from a point where there are one or two states which actually put out a tender. For example, Gujarat. They had a tender for supply of the hardware software and then provide IPR educational content for science, maths, and English in Gujarati, and also to train some teachers and ensure that the hardware software is working, which is annual maintenance contract. However, no services, as in teachers. Now, when this came, we assessed this and we stayed out of it for one good reason. That same thing was tried almost 3 years back, 2 or 3 years back in Orissa. And that project is one of the biggest failures of the government. In fact, two of the players, I don't want to mention them, two of the other players got so-called notices from the government because the grassroots inside the school, nothing was working. There are many schools where computers were not working, many schools where the trained teachers were transferred and the education system, the classes were not happening. So we believe that is not the right model. They are not yet mature. Maybe a couple of years from now, we may reach there. So we assess such contracts and actually don't participate. Also, for example, government in another case, I think it was West Bengal, where the government said that, okay, we have got a few thousand schools. We'll split it across 3-4 vendors. Now, you have to put your own hardware and software. We don't guarantee any students. You have to go and sell to the students. If they come, great. If they don't, too bad. But this is again a faulted model, because this has failed in Haryana once. This has failed in Punjab. So where the government school itself is not charging any fees to the student. It's free education literally in many of the most of the government schools. When the parents are expected to pay 80 rupees for computer education, that starts creating a lot of problems. So we have stayed away from this high risk, looks like great opportunity kind of business, and we've been very conservative on participating in these kinds of tenders. However, I know for sure that there are a couple of others who have participated, and they've already talked about potential revenues which can come from these few thousand schools over the next many years.
What kind of business are you comfortable in the institutional segment, assuming data problems what to be resolved at certain point of time? What kind of model would you be comfortable in participating in institutional business?
Assuming
the data problem is not there.
Government side or the private side?
Government side.
Government side, three types. One is, it also depends on which state it is. For example, Tamil Nadu, when we did a 90 crore project first time, we are completely comfortable because we used to get their payments on a 30 days net basis for every quarter for 20 quarters. So we, in our own sense, if you were to give a credit rating, we would say that, okay, we will work with that state again if they come with a BOOT model where we have to put capex and things like that. So contextually, depending on some of these states, will be very quite comfortable with taking, providing computers, etc. Other than that, the other model which we are comfortable, which we are doing now in Himachal Pradesh, is computers are provided by the school, and what we do is we provide the content, we give the services, and we do the assessment of students, and we show to them that how continuously having NIT in the schools is providing an improvement not only in IT education, but also in the IT related education in science and maths. third part of this is to also provide content in this school, content as in those content software which we create. I talked about science and social science, etc., to this school. And fourth one which are left is teacher training on a standalone basis. And that's something which you know that we are already doing a lot with Microsoft, their Siksha project, the IT academies which they set up in Uttaranchal, Hyderabad, and many more coming up. That's completely manned by us, and that whole thing is outsourced to us. So these are what we are comfortable in, and these work well.
In terms of the contract this year, did you bid for West Bengal, Gujarat, Karnataka, Tamil Nadu?
No. West Bengal, I was mentioning to you about the 3,000-4,000 schools they talked about. Government has no commitment, which means government is not providing any plan budget for it. It is entirely up to the vendors to come and first install their hardware and then start soliciting business from the students. We have stayed away from it. That's not the right model. It will almost for sure will fail. As far as the Karnataka is concerned, there was a tender for 468 schools, which was all about providing hardware and content. And I think content, we participated, but we found that when the government came back and said whether we can match the L1 tender, our price was about 13, 14 lakhs. And the L1 tender was 7 lakhs. It's not possible to make profit at that price. But I understand that the L1 and L2 have probably supplying at that price, but it's not tenable if you want to provide quality products. We can some companies do provide refurbished products in some of the schools. We have found that out also. So coming back, these have not, Tamil Nadu had a tender, but they delayed it, the government changed, etc. But in case that comes, we will definitely take that up.
Okay, so Karnataka and Tamil Nadu are where you would be interested in?
Karnataka, I would be very wary because we have been having a lot of problems on working on the bills receivables, not for any reason to do with quality, just to do with government change, bureaucratic process, they are not providing plan budget, they are doing providing for finance during the year, though they are given the contract 2 years back. So Karnataka, I would be very wary of in going forward. But we don't know. Maybe there will be, if we are able to negotiate much better payment terms in future, as in an escrow or something, why not? We will go in. Tamil Nadu, no projects have come up, but we expect that to come up this year.
I just want to complete Karnataka story. I'll be surprised if an existing player would want to bid for Karnataka because everybody is in the same boat.
In terms of this business, you supply the equipment also. So is and that is perhaps written off couple of years. Is depreciation a very large portion of your revenues in this business? Because unlike in the private business where you don't supply the equipment.
No. Did you say the depreciation or
The depreciation, because that would be, or the equipment for that matter, because that would be written off over a 5 year period.
Yeah. So, no, the size of the deal becomes large because of the built-in hardware. Obviously, the margins on that are lower. And in any case, I think right now the relative attractiveness of this business to us, given our priorities, and I think in the rest of the session we talked about the three new businesses and now the acquisition. I think we would like to reevaluate our portfolio to focus more on things which we see are more profitable, and going forward give us the right volume growth.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Prasad.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. At this moment, I would like to hand the floor back to Mr. Tarani for final remarks. Over to you, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much for being on the call. As usual, we learnt a lot from your questions. I am sure Element K has aroused a lot of curiosity, and there will be follow-up questions. I am afraid we were not able to answer some of the more details related questions which we have, which we can normally answer for NIIT, but not for Element K. But I am sure next quarter's call, we would have much more data and we would be able to help you in evaluating these two options very well. We are very excited about Element K and the strategic opportunity it offers us. And more importantly, we feel proud of the fact that we can now be the leading global learning solutions provider and the first and the best choice, we believe, for LBPO services to our customers. So with that, I would like to close this call. Thank you very much. We are always available to you for any follow-up questions on telephone. Chetna is the right person to contact, chetnak@niit.com. Thank you very much. Good night.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for choosing Webex Conferencing Service. That concludes this conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your line. Thank you and have a nice evening.